When I was a little kid back in the 80s, there were a bunch of Heinz ketchup commercials with the tagline, "The best things come to those who wait." And one of them had a guy sitting and he was spinning around in his restaurant chair with the open bottle facing down while his food was being prepared. The food came just in time as some ketchup fell from the bottle. Really cool. And so one time when I was with my family at a restaurant, I decided to try it out. And so I took the Heinz bottle, opened up the cap, and proceeded to spin around in my chair. You know where this is going, don't you? In the short time it took me to get around, almost the entire contents of the bottle had spilled out. So, either the restaurant had watered down their ketchup to try to make it last longer, or Heinz sure has some explaining to do concerning their false advertising. But going back to their commercials, the point is that the best things in life are worth waiting for. Our text for today is James chapter 5, verses 7 through 12b, patient. And last week, the beginning of chapter 5, we looked at James's chastisement of the rich who were treating the poor unjustly. Well, with this section, he changed the subject matter from those who were afflicting to those afflicted, his poor Christian brethren. And he showed that their response to the mistreatment that they had received should be patience and endurance. Christians are always going to face trouble while living in this realm. Therefore, these qualities are necessary. They're needed to remain faithful to the Lord. And I'm convinced that the principles that are found in this section, they're just as applicable today when we are oppressed or going through other difficulties. Now, some people, they teach the gospel of health and wealth, sometimes called prosperity theology. And it promises that living for Christ, and especially giving money to certain Christian organizations and ministries, well, that's going to turn this world into a bed of roses. It's the idea that if you're a faithful Christian, that God is going to bless you with health, security, and prosperity. But the scriptures, they certainly don't teach that. Jesus flat out said, "In the world you will have tribulation," John 16:33. "And if they persecuted me, they will also persecute you," John 15:20. At times, it's going to get pretty rough. The question is, how are we going to respond when those times come? Well, James said to be patient, and the first thing us impatient people say is, "For how long?" "Until the coming of the Lord." Ooh, that could be a long time. You'll notice there are at least three references to the end of time in this short paragraph. In verse 7, verse 8, and verse 9. And then there's a reference to the judgment in verse 12. The reason is because circumstances are going to change for the righteous in that event. And so every Christian needs to live in the hope of Christ's return. If we're convinced that this life is short, and our Lord is going to set things right concerning those who mistreat us, well, we've got a stimulus to hold out and to not react by losing hope or retaliating or something like that. See, the coming of the Lord, it should be motivation for Christians to endure whatever comes our way, to be patient until the day of his return. Now, that's something that is definitely more worth waiting for than ketchup. So number one, those who are filling in the bulletin insert, strengthen your hearts, verses 7 and 8. Let's read this together. "Be patient, therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. Behold, the farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it, until it gets the early and late rains. You too be patient, strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand." Now, the expression "strengthen your hearts," it's not talking about doing more cardio in the gym, although I think more Americans ought to do that as well. It simply means to stand firm in the faith. And this word for strengthen that James used here is from sterizo. It means to set up something so that it remains immovable, okay, to fix it in place. And it's often translated as establish. Well, as you know, the Bible talks a lot about the heart, the inner person. A simple concordance search is going to show you that the word heart and its derivatives is between 800 and 900 times in our English Bibles. So why is the heart such a big deal? Because you can't always control what's happening on the outside, what's happening around you, but you can control what's happening in you. Now, I had an old teacher who liked to say, it's not what happens to you in life that matters, it's what happens in you. Because if what happens in you is right, then what happens to you doesn't matter. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to ask everyone who struggles with patience to raise their hands, partly because I don't want to have to raise mine. We're obviously at different levels in this, but if you are alive, I suspect that you have to work on being patient in one way or another, and there's still room for growth. One problem is that we live in a very impatient society. We don't walk, we drive. And we tailgate and we honk our horns because the other cars, they're not going fast enough. And we're going through a drive-through or we throw our food in the microwave and we get upset because it's taking too long. See, right now, some of you are thinking, how long is this sermon going to take? Probably longer than you hoped. The word for patient here is from macrothumeo. It's a term that's usually applied to patients with other people and concerning others. The word literally means long temper, and sometimes you'll find it translated as long suffering. You see, you suffer long before you react. Simply put, it's having tolerance and putting up with people. It's having a long fuse. R.C. Trench, in his Synonyms of the New Testament, he said, a man is macrothumia if he has to relate to injurious persons and does not allow himself to be provoked by them or burst out into anger. See, Christians, they're not to give way to wrath or revenge, the normal knee-jerk reactions. James, well, he offered the example of a dryland farmer who's got to wait for the harvest. Now, the farmer, he obviously doesn't expect the harvest on the day that he plants. He's got to labor for a few months before he's going to receive the fruit of his labor. And it may be difficult. He may receive several setbacks and disappointments before the harvest comes in. He's fighting the weather and weeds and birds and bugs. But you see, he doesn't just plow up his field in anger or fire all the help or give up simply because things get difficult or they don't exactly go the way that he may want. If the farmer is going to receive the fruit of his labor, he must exercise patience. So he patiently waits for both the early and the late rains to provide what's needed for his crop. See, without the early rains, the seed wouldn't germinate. Without the late rains, the crop wouldn't mature. Now, the point is, he patiently waits for the proper time. And for us, see, any mistreatment that we might receive, it shouldn't take us off track. We can't allow suffering to provoke us to wrath toward our enemies or to give up on God. And so we need to strengthen our hearts, to toughen our minds so that we can endure whatever comes our way. We need to have a fixed purpose. We need to hold on to that no matter what, like the farmer. Christians are to be stout-hearted, not faint-hearted. James, well, he believed that we could find this kind of strength of heart if we realize that the coming of the Lord is at hand or near. And because of the time frame, some people, they think this is speaking of the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, when he came in physical judgment on the Jewish nation. That's not necessarily the case. See, to be near or at hand, it could suggest that the coming of the Lord could be at any moment. When Jesus spoke of his return in Matthew 24, I believe he taught that we could expect it at any time after the fall of Jerusalem. And so every generation of Christian needs to be on the alert and watchful for that return. See, his coming is always at hand. And on top of that, we never know when our personal lives are going to be over. We're not promised tomorrow. So the farmer needs patience to wait until God's creation does its work, and the Christian needs patience to wait until Christ comes. And then we will receive the fruit of our labor. Number two, do not complain against one another. Verse 9. Let's continue reading. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. Okay, what happens when we've been treated bad? Well, okay, we want to take it out on someone else, don't we? we want to vent our frustration on others. And so given the circumstances of a Christian community that's under pressure, James's recipients, it's not surprising that he's got to warn them against disunity within the church. Sadly, you see, the difficulties of life, they've got a way of drawing out impatience by complaining and arguing against those who are closest to us. Now, be honest. Have you ever had a bad day at work, and then when you got home, you took it out on your family? They didn't deserve that. Why do we do that? Or have you ever taken a long trip with your family in a small car? I mean, just complaining and fighting, it can easily result, it results from the difficult circumstances, the length of sitting and waiting, and yet, once you get there, well, the trip was often worth it, and the grumbling and the fighting is completely unnecessary. It just made the trip harder than it needed to be. And so if we can see the goal, you know, our destination, heaven, and we keep that in mind, it can help to prevent grumbling and give us patience. Romans 8:18, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us." A really good verse to memorize. Well, also James, he said that we should realize that to complain against one another, well, that's really, you're risking the Lord's condemnation when he comes. You see, the judge is standing right at the door. So it kind of paints a picture of his entrance into this realm. Now, okay, keeping with this picture, what's he going to find when he opens the door? Is he going to find his children patiently waiting for him with their eyes glued on the door? Or will he find them distracted and unconcerned about his coming and engaged in the pitiful mistreatment of each other? We might think of a father returning home to find his children, well, not doing their chores as they were asked, but rather they're just complaining and they're fighting, quarreling among themselves as if they had forgotten they even had a father who was coming home. So complaining against one another, it's certainly an indication of a lack of patience and a lack of endurance. Number three, learn patience from past examples. Verses 10 and 11, let's read. "As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we count those blessed who endured. You've heard of the endurance of Job, and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful." And it's always encouraging to know and to hear about others who have successfully gone through what we have to go through. And the first example offered is the prophets. See, the prophets of God throughout the ages, they received just all kinds of unjust treatment. Their suffering, of course, it came as a result of their service to God as they spoke in the name of the Lord. See, often people didn't like what they were saying. And so the prophets, they should have been respected. People should have honored them because, see, they were specially chosen by God for this task. And the people, they actually should have longed for the prophets and their message. But instead, what did they do? They often persecuted them. In the Old Testament, we see them being mocked, threatened, beaten, chained and imprisoned, kept in, well, cisterns full of mud, and many times killed. See, Jewish tradition, it says that Jeremiah was stoned and Isaiah was sawn in two. But in spite of their hardships, see, that those prophets, they never gave up. Jeremiah, okay, he certainly thought about quitting, but he couldn't do it. He knew his work was too important. And not only did the prophets maintain their faithfulness to their mission, they never turned against their persecutors. Now you think of how easy it would have been for Jeremiah to just rear back and deck someone, you know, one of his persecutors. Well, did he do that? No, no. They endured it with patience. And of course, they never could have done their work if they hadn't patiently endured. And thus, we count them blessed. We consider them great men of God. You know, Luke 6, 22 and 23, it says, "Blessed are you when men hate you and ostracize you and cast insults at you and spurn your name as evil for the sake of the Son of Man. Be glad in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way their fathers used to treat the prophets." Okay, Job, that's the second example James put forth for our encouragement. And this is the only New Testament reference to Job. And as you know, Satan, he believed that the blameless and upright Job, well, he would curse. curse God if he was put under the test of suffering. And so God stood back and allowed Satan to take away his property, his children, and even his health. You know, in Job 2:9, his wife said, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." Now, I don't know if she meant curse God and commit suicide or try to cuss God out so bad that he kills you. But Job replied, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God and not accept adversity?" Well, then his friends, you remember, they came along and they weren't any better. They thought that surely it was his fault. He'd done something to deserve it. So they're like, "What'd you do, man? What'd you do?" Not very helpful. And yes, Job, he wanted to know why those things were happening to him. But he, through all of it, he never turned his back on God. He never gave up on him. Now, the word endurance in verse 11, it's a different word from patience, from that word patience in verses 7, 8, and 10, even though it's sometimes translated as patience as well. So here, from hupomene, and this word primarily has reference to patience with your circumstances and not with people, like the previous term. And it literally means to abide under. And James, he used this word a few times in chapter 1. So it paints this picture of being under this great load, but you remain there and you endure it. You're not crushed. And so it's the ability to go through the tough times of life without breaking under the strain, continuing on even when it's rough. You never let yourself be overcome. Will you stand strong as a Christian in the face of trials, or will you tuck tail and run? Will you turn and bolt when the persecution or the suffering, whatever it is, becomes too uncomfortable? See, there are too many people with their hand always hovering over the cancel button or the eject button. "That's it. I quit my job. We're getting a divorce. I'm never going to church again. And I threw my phone in the lake." It's easy to give up. Are your difficulties going to cause you to throw in the towel? Or have you strengthened your heart so that you're able to push through them and to keep on keeping on? To Job, he passed the test. He continued firm in his faith despite just his amazingly difficult circumstances, way more than any of us have had to endure. And so the Lord blessed him greatly. Read the last chapter of Job sometime. The Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. And guess what? God would bring a good end to the sufferings of James's time and our present time for those who are suffering yet remain faithful to him through it all. So whenever we might think that, man, it's really rough, okay? Really, I got it bad in life. We just need to remember the prophets and Job to know that what we are called to endure is really small potatoes in comparison. Number 4, do not swear. Verse 12. Let's read the last verse. "But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by hell or with any other oath. Let your yes be yes and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment." Well, the scholars, they're all over the place as the purpose of the expression, "but above all." I tend to think that it's just something as readers had a real problem with. And so this is something preeminent for them to heed. Now, James is not suggesting that his readers were uttering profanities. I mean, this section is not talking about hitting your thumb with a hammer, you know, and saying a four-letter word, even though that's certainly something we should avoid. No, this is confirming a statement or a promise or an undertaking by an oath. And he certainly seemed to be repeating the teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, 34 through 37 on keeping one's word. So why did he put it here? Well, okay, this may be a general admonition that doesn't have any connection to what James just talked about, but if you think about it, you see, one manifestation of impatience in times of trial might be hasty, irreverent, or deceptive oaths, you know, to save your skin, or to get out of trouble, or something like that. Well, I think the real problem here, the real issue is, well, it's honesty and telling the truth. Jesus, he condemned the dishonesty of the Jews who tended to swear oaths in deceptive ways. one of his denouncements of the scribes and Pharisees. He said, "Woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, that is nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obligated." And so they're saying it's okay to go back on their word by the technicalities that they had developed concerning their vows. Now, apparently James faced the same problem that Jesus confronted in his earthly ministry. So there seems to have been a whole lot of swearing and oath-taking just going around. See, some people are dishonest by claiming in a big way that they're going to do something when they have absolutely no intention of keeping their word. And it's kind of like the fine print that's on a contract or an advertisement that, see, it legally allows them to go back on what they said they would do. Now, I personally don't believe this is forbidding any manner of taking oaths. Some would disagree. See, oaths were actually required under the law of Moses in certain circumstances, like Exodus 22 concerning your neighbor's animal. And we got a number of Old Testament examples of oath-taking, like Abraham and Abimelech in Genesis 21. In Matthew 26, Caiaphas, well, he wanted Jesus to answer by oath if he was the Messiah, which he apparently did. And even God took an oath to substantiate his promises to us, Hebrews 6:17. See, in this country, you know, there are occasions when we're required to take oaths in official matters, like in filling out our income tax or certain business forms where we sign our names to a document and acknowledge under penalty of law that we are telling the truth. It's an oath. I mean, even the wording on some credit card receipts where we sign our name could be considered an oath. In a court of law, when we're called to be a witness, we must swear to tell the truth, even if we don't use those words. See, physicians, they take the Hippocratic oath. Police officers, they take an oath to uphold the law. Those in the armed forces, they take an oath of enlistment and so forth. One thing, okay, is none of those are swearing by God or any sacred thing. But I think you still have to say that each of them is an oath. And so I don't think do not swear is to be taken as a blanket prohibition against any and all possible oath-taking. But obviously don't do anything that's going to hurt your conscience. What I think Jesus and James are condemning is the giving of our word without keeping it or intending to keep it. I mean, it's specifically a condemnation against taking hypocritical oaths for the purpose of deception. A Christian is not to say, I had my fingers crossed, or something like that, in order to get out of an obligation. The expression, either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, so it refers to just any means that might be employed in taking these oaths. Now, apparently, the scribes and the Pharisees, they might swear by heaven, but then they later renege on their promise by saying that, well, you know, I only swore by heaven and not by God or his throne. You know, Matthew 23:22, Jesus pointed out in this case, "And he who swears by heaven swears both by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it." So you see how ridiculous it is. I only swore by heaven and not by God himself. Ha ha, it doesn't count. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. Christians are to be known for their honesty and integrity. And so in everyday circumstances, whenever we say yes, we should mean yes. And whenever we say no, we should mean no. We're not to give this big flowery oath every time we say something. And we certainly, we're not to attempt to wiggle out of our obligations by redefining words and trying to find loopholes and technicalities. See, this country, it once held a man's word in high regard. A man's word is his bond. A simple handshake sealed the deal between the people. Man, that is no longer the case. We're at a point in our country now that, well, it's hard to find trustworthy people, and so we're just suspicious of everyone. But Christians are not to act like the world. We are to rise above it. And so we should be known for our honesty and our integrity. There should be no small print on the contracts given by Christians. And again, so that you may not fall under judgment. That should help motivate us to live in accordance with God's standards, not the world's. So lying in all forms, it's attributed to the influence of Satan. And Jesus, he said of him, he was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. John 8:44. So, are we going to align ourselves with the Lord or with the devil when it comes to our word, when it comes to our oath-taking? As has been said, the best guarantee of any statement is not an oath, but the good character of the one who makes it. See, as a Christian, no one who knows us should ever think of demanding an oath or something like that from us, because they know, they're certain that we're always going to be telling the truth. Our yes is yes, and our no is no. Well, in conclusion, you know, it's easy for us to lose patience in times of great difficulty and trial, for our patience to decrease as our burdens increase. But the coming of the Lord, that should be motivation for Christians to patiently endure whatever hardships and heartaches come our way. And so, let's strengthen our hearts. Let's strengthen our hearts to endure. As the saying goes, we need to keep on keeping on. Or as Winston Churchill would say, never give in, never give in, never, 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 in nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. A different context, but still really good advice. On top of that, let's not take out our frustrations on one another. And let's learn patience from the examples of the prophets and Job. And also, one manifestation of impatience in times of trial may be hasty, irreverent, or deceptive oaths. So let's make sure we don't fall into that as well. You see, vows, promising, swearing, oath-taking, just let your yes be yes and your no, no. So in times of mistreatment, of course, we always need to follow the example of Christ. While being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. You see, with the righteous God on our side, it should be a lot easier to endure those who oppress us. And so, is the righteous God on your side? Or rather, are you on his side?